Blog Talk Radio.
No chill for Brooke tonight. Hello and welcome to PNN Extra. It's Monday, February 3. It's Iowa caucus night, and we are here together to ring in caucus night. Wow, what a day it's been. How's it shaken? When I woke up this morning and I checked my direct messages on Twitter, there were a lot of people online talking about their anxiety and sharing their feelings about how they're a little anxious for tonight, or maybe they had a case of nerves. And this morning, for whatever reason, I wasn't feeling that. I was like, oh, yeah, it's going to be fine. We're going to have this caucus and it's all going to be great, whatever. And as the day wore on, my thoughts on that changed. Just general physical reactions to the way these things go. So my anxiety has grown a little bit throughout the day. So I thought I would just get that out there, just get that over with, let you guys know. I'm feeling it too. So this is some excitement. It's 2020. This is the first election. This is the first caucus. This is the first voting in the 2020 Democratic presidential primary. This is very important to a lot of us who have been rooting for or working for or looking for Bernie to make a comeback from 2016. And I want to make sure that we know this isn't exactly a comeback. He never went anywhere. Bernie Sanders pretty much started the Our Revolution 501c4, and that work never stopped. So kudos to the team, to the Bernie Sanders team writ large, to Our Revolution, because they never dropped the ball. They've been completely on point this whole time. I want to share a lot of stuff with you guys tonight. I want to share some information that will be useful that has to do with caucuses. I want to share some information on the Bernie freakout, which I think is super important for Bernie supporters to understand and to have a chance to regard, to look over the landscape of Bernie freaking outness that is out there. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. We're going to look at some polls. I'm going to do a little speculating on what tomorrow might look like. I've got a few predictions on that. And I have some interesting information on social media trolling and establishment or party elite or cultural elite efforts to stem the tide of what they consider to be misinformation or disinformation. It's a dangerous precedent. It's not something that we generally want to see if we're in favor generally of civil liberties and free press. So we'll save that towards the end, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. First, let's get this started on the right foot. This weekend, there was the campaign released some amazing new ads and some new video footage, And one that I am just super thrilled about is, I'll get this started right here. This is an ad that is, what is the establishment afraid of? And it's the Bernie Sanders, what I'm calling the Seven Nation Army ad. Hold on just a moment. Get this queued up.
You can tell how good I feel by how nervous the establishment is getting. Suddenly, Donald Trump is talking about our campaign. Suddenly, we have the Democratic establishment very nervous about this campaign. We got Wall Street nervous. We got the insurance company nervous. We got the drug company nervous. We got the fossil fuel industry nervous. We are their worst nightmare.
And Bernie Sanders has a lot of money.
No doubt. Don't bring up Bernie Sanders because that's the red flag in front of me. And they're starting to think, could this really happen?
Something's going on here because Bernie is rising. The CNN poll, he leads Biden. Well, he leads Biden by 3 points among non-white voters.
Even if it's a Republican, sometimes you'll hear, well, you know, I still really like Bernie Sanders. And he's got a fairly diverse coalition.
Bernie right now. We got billionaires going on television crying that they're going to have to start paying their fair share of taxes.
They can be a hardcore Trump supporter. I like Bernie Sanders. He's honest. He's the most popular senator in the entire country.
Sanders now in the lead.
Could there really be a political movement in America that brings together blacks and whites and Latinos and Asian Americans and Native Americans, gay and straight, to stand up and working class people fighting for change?
Hell yeah. That is an amazing ad. It translates into audio. If you get a chance, get online, look that up on, well, you can search for it on Twitter. You can find it on Bernie Sanders' YouTube page, YouTube channel, which you need to subscribe to. You need to hit the bell for notifications because that's where you're going to find out about live streams and town halls and events where Bernie is appearing, and also events where surrogates are appearing. To me, Bernie surrogates are just as amazing and worth hearing as he is. And sometimes even more interesting because he's got such a diversity of people who are speaking out on his behalf. Okay, one of the things I like in that ad is that he mentions that all of these people are nervous, that the bankers are nervous, that corporate media is nervous, and so on and so forth. And he also showed Chris Matthews in that piece. He showed Chris Matthews smiling and kind of mugging for the camera to say, this Bernie is, this is all very exciting, you know. And, you know, Chris Matthews doesn't, I don't think that he's personally very excited for Bernie Sanders. And the reason why I say that is because this morning he was on, I forget what channel, I forget where it was at, but I have a clip here of Chris Matthews pretty much just losing his mind about a potential for a Bernie Sanders win in Iowa or win all around. Here's that.
That's because I think he's certainly to me reminiscent of the 1972 campaign where George McGovern, a man of the left, got nominated with a lot of excitement. Gave a speech at 2:48 in the morning, got blown away 49 states. It's not probably going to be that bad because the country is truly divided about 50-50. But it's not going to be good if it's Bernie. So I think we're going to see a really exciting Super Bowl.
It's not going to be good if it's Bernie. This is Chris Matthews. And I wish you could see his face because he's got the Chris Matthews worried face. He's super worried that Bernie Sanders could pull out an upset. And, you know, to be clear, these guys, they're not concerned about Bernie Sanders pulling out an upset in Iowa because they feel like they can fix that. They feel like if Bernie Sanders does well tonight, they'll just hit him really hard tomorrow, or they'll ignore him or do what they've been doing, and, you know, they'll deal. What they're worried about is that he's going to win nationally, that he's going to take the whole primary, and there's nothing they can do about it. That's what they're worried about. They're also worried about paying a little more in taxes. In that Seven Nation Army ad, there's a couple of amazing clips, and one is honest to goodness when they say that that billionaires were weeping on television because of their taxes. That's no lie. There's an actual clip of a billionaire losing it, just, you know, waterworks, thinking about having to actually pay his fair share of taxes. And, you know, we're getting ready to do our taxes. Everyone should have their tax forms from, you know, whether you do W-2, you know, whether you do the regular withholding, or if you're an independent contractor doing gig work, like most of us, you should already have all of that paperwork, and you should already be worried about it. I know I am. I'm worried about, I just don't like math. I mean, that's part of my problem. But we get crushed. We get crushed every year with taxes because we have I'm a gig worker. I'm an independent contractor, and we have a salaried worker and no kids. And so we just get crushed. The percentage that we pay in taxes is like 28-29%. And that's living in Florida. That's, you know, we don't pay a state income tax, but we also don't have hardly any state services, you know. So, you know, living in Florida is a lot like living in the show Deadwood, out in the frontier. People are running scared. And the people who are running scared are the people with the microphones and the people who buy ink by the barrel and who run large online publications. So you're going to hear a lot about their worries. You're going to hear about their concerns. And you're going to hear about their anxiety. And contrast that with how you never hear about our anxiety and our worries, our inability to go to see a doctor or to have a health emergency without losing our home. You don't hear about our anxieties about, you know, whether or not we'll be able to, you know, have enough money to fix the car if it breaks down, or what's going to happen, you know, when our kids are old enough to go to college. You know, college education now is about what it costs, or what it used to cost, to buy a house, buy a car, settle down, and start a family. Back when it only took one income to do that. So the amount that people are going into debt to have a college education is pretty much equivalent to all of the outlay that people used to pay over the course of a lifetime just to do the middle class American dream kind of thing. And so people start out with that much in debt, that much behind, you know, just starting out life as in peonage, you know, as a slave labor, essentially. And I don't think that that's too much of an exaggeration, because here's the reality. When you leave school with a lot of student debt, you're not going to go into a field, let me restate that, you're going to go into the field that promises you the most money. If you've got the choice between going into a people helping field or into the arts or culture, or to take a chance on doing your own small business or writing novels or, you know, whatever it is, you're not going to do that. That's not an option anymore. You've got to go out there. You've got to get a job. You've got to make the most money you possibly can. And you've got to stay somewhere consistently to maintain your health insurance. So that debt and the way that we are forcing whole generations into peonage is changing the face of our society for the worst. You know, so people with amazing talent in mathematics, they don't go into the sciences anymore, you know, and take a chance on having to write grants to get funded to find a cure for cancer. No, you're going to go into financial services and work on Wall Street and try to make major bank for the banks so that, you know, maybe the dream there is, I'll retire at 45 and then do something good, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it's changing the way that we relate to the world. These are our anxieties, and these are the anxieties that you never hear about on corporate media. But holy cow, are you going to hear all about how nervous millionaires and billionaires are about a social democrat or a democratic socialist coming along who wants to make sure that everybody has health care, or that we don't go into debt for our education, and so on and so forth. So today I took stock of all of these articles that were just filling up the Google search, the Google News search this morning on Bernie Sanders, and was all of these, you know, nightmare, anxiety, fever dreams. Okay, let's save that. One is from CNBC, and if I can find that online. But before I go to that, let's give the other side of it. Vanity Fair did a piece yesterday, or a couple days ago, called Get a Grip, Bernie Bedwetters. His message and media machine could be potent against Trump. And so this writer, Peter Hamby, has written a fairly long profile of Bernie Sanders and Bernie Sanders's potential and his strength, his potential to win against Donald Trump, and his strength vis-a-vis Donald Trump. And it's a really good article. Michael Moore was touting it this morning, and you know, it's that Vanity Fair kind of thing, you know, it kind of is what it is. But there's a few good lines in here and a couple of good things to highlight. So let me start with the lead here is the Bernie bedwetting has reached full-blown rubber sheet mode. That's a great opening sentence. You really got to hand it to Hamby here. Bernie bedwetting has reached a full-blown rubber sheet mode, while Bernie Sanders, hanging on to a slim polling lead in Iowa and an even bigger one in New Hampshire, panicked Democrats are sounding the alarm that Bernie Sanders could surf a wave of unstoppable momentum all the way to the Democratic National Convention in Milwaukee. Nominating Sanders to run against Donald Trump would be, quote, an act of insanity, according to New York Magazine's Jonathan Chait. Quote, Dems tormented over how to stop Bernie read a recent Politico headline. And that story quoted Rahm Emanuel, who Hamby refers to as the high priest of boardroom centrism, proclaiming with authority that Sanders will repel swing voters. These are some snappy sentences, you know, right on. Bonnie Campbell, a longtime supporter of Hillary Clinton and now Joe Biden, talking about Sanders as if he were infected with the coronavirus. Yeah, this is a, you know, shades of he makes my skin crawl. So this guy does a really good job of laying out a lot of the Bernie freak out. And then you get down to what's really at issue here, and that's that the person who's really freaking out about Bernie is Donald Trump, because Donald Trump doesn't want to run against Bernie. He would love to run against Biden. Can you imagine? I would love to run against Joe Biden at this point. I don't know if you saw the video of him being led around by his granddaughter today by the arm. It was, oh my God, it was so bad. It's elder abuse at this point. He doesn't need to be in public. Anyway, so Trump campaign manager Brad Parscale recently told CBS News, again, this is from the Vanity Fair piece, recently told CBS News that the media is underestimating Bernie Sanders' appeal. Trump himself has started asking his team about Sanders' polling performance in key battleground states, specifically Pennsylvania, the Daily Beast has reported. Democrats fretting about the prospect of nominating Sanders should consider for a moment how the few years in American politics have exposed the fragility of conventional wisdom and incremental thinking. They might also consider Xanax. I think we should all consider Xanax, actually, just for tonight, and then, you know, just let it go. But here, Hamby is doing, he's doing a little sociological analysis of what's really going on in America, you know, not just in, you know, a few square blocks in Brooklyn or, you know, another elite Eastern coastal city. He's going into, hey, look, there's other people in this country and they have some real anxieties and some real needs. And we saw how Donald Trump approached that and appealed to that. And let's consider for a moment that the appeal of Bernie Sanders is from the opposite end of that, you know. And Michael Moore made this analogy at the Cedar Rapids rally this weekend, and he was on fire. Everybody was on fire this weekend. Michael Moore swinging for the fences, you know, so that there's two choices in this campaign. There's you know, Donald Trump and there's Bernie Sanders. And he said that Donald Trump represents, you know, ugliness and fear and everything that's the worst impulses of the American psyche. And Bernie Sanders represents love and compassion. And he actually got this rally of people, it was like 5,000 people, to chant love and compassion with him. Now, I got to tell you, I was cooking dinner when I heard this. I just sort of had it on in the background. And I realized that what I was hearing was Michael Moore leading a chant of love and compassion at a rally. And I thought, you know, what alternate reality have I walked into? This is amazing. Michael Moore was preaching to this rally and talking about Bernie Sanders and democratic socialism in the context of Jesus Christ, who he referred to as JC, which I freaking love. And let me just tell you why I love that. A long time ago, some friends of mine, they're at their buddy's house, and their buddy, his parents were all into like Oral Roberts and, you know, like televangelists or whatever. They were the kind of people that had one of those big white Bibles on a pedestal right when you walked into the house. You see this sort of thing in the South. This was Tennessee. And one of my buddies took a pen and in the Bibles, in these family Bibles, you're supposed to, you know, put your name, like the people who've had it or the people who've used it. I don't know. But in the front of the Bible, a friend of mine scribbled all my best, J. Christ, which still cracks me up. So now, you know, anytime anyone refers to the Son of Man as JC, it just absolutely cracks me up. So here's Michael Moore talking about how JC was the first democratic socialist. And, you know, really, what's wrong with that? What is it? You know, what is so wrong about making sure that everyone has a piece of the, what did he say? A seat at the table and a piece of the pie. What's wrong with that? Can we not do that? A seat at the table and a piece of pie? Why not? Why can't we do that? I wrote to a friend of mine after seeing that, as a matter of fact, a more professional political person than I am. And, you know, I said, even though I am super not religious, I am like the most not religious person you'll run into. I'm not like a crazed atheist, though. You know, I very much, you know, have a sense about me about, you know, the kind of mathematical connection that we might all share with each other, you know, and you know, kind of a amorphous panpsychism. I'm not religious. I don't do worship, and I don't do religion per se. But I gotta tell you, when at rallies, we are moved through values and we're moved through moral action, you know, when those are the chords that are being struck, that is what really moves me. I don't want to hear, I don't want a PowerPoint with charts and graphs, and I don't want to hear about, you know, polling numbers and this and that. I want to hear about how we can make things better and how we are better people by making things better. Those are the kinds of messages that I think move most people, regardless of where you fall on the spectrum with regard to how you, you know, what you do on Sunday, whether you go to Home Depot or you go to First Methodist or whatever it is. And so, you know, I think this is something that people are missing about Bernie Sanders, and especially people in the media, because they're not going to pick up on the anxieties of middle America. They're not going to pick up on the anxieties of people in financial distress or those of us who are on the margins. You know, you could fall off, you know, your one major illness from, you know, really falling off the economic ladder entirely. They don't get that, but they also don't get what it is that moves us. They think that what it is that moves us is this kind of squinty-eyed, sharp-elbowed cynicism, and it's not. You know, what gets us off the couch and what gets us caring about stuff is actually caring about other people and caring about the world around us. And the world around us is embodied in the Green New Deal, and caring for people is embodied in Medicare for All. And, you know, you can go right down the list of all of Bernie Sanders's policies and find the way that you can see reflected in that a deep caring and a deep compassion for people that is missing from not just all of the candidates in this particular election cycle, but I haven't seen it at all in my entire lifetime. And I've been voting since 1984. Like, the very first vote I cast was for Jesse Jackson in the primary in 84. So, you know, it's all been a steady diet of cynicism since then. I meant to, while I was doing that, pull up the CNBC article. There's a funny article that came up early this morning on how a Bernie Sanders win would somehow injure the stock market. So CNBC, of course, they're hand-wringing, and I thought I printed it out, but it's not here. CNBC and their hand-wringing are very worried about if Bernie Sanders wins, oh my God, what's going to happen to the stock market? And that, to me, that brought up a misconception, I think, that a lot of people have, and definitely that the media has, about the importance of the stock market. A stock market does not mean a whole hell of a lot to most people, especially most people under 40. I'm 53, and I don't know anyone who has, first of all, I don't know anyone who has a defined benefit program, like a pension. Secondly, I don't know anyone who has funded a 401k. We're barely able to meet our rent and our basic needs. So we are certainly not, in paying off our student loans, we're certainly not able to put money away to retire on. That's not happening. And the whole idea when Bill Clinton made this, you know, push this whole 401k scheme on us, was he wanted everyone to be bought into that system. He wanted everyone to care about how the stock market was doing, so that we were vested in their interests, so that our interests were aligned with, and that we would absorb the interests of Wall Street. And I think that there are people who do absorb those values. I hear it from the parents of people who are my age, so boomers, that they feel like they have enough stocked away in mutual funds or whatever, that when the whole stock market goes up, they feel like they're doing well. And when the stock market goes down, they feel like they're doing less well. Well, let me tell you another story about how that works. My closest relatives, my only relatives, my aunt and uncle, my uncle worked for Eastman Kodak in Kingsport, Tennessee for his whole career. And they were, he was a research chemist, he's a PhD chemist. And they were forced to, I guess you could say, it was mandatory. He didn't have a choice. He had to put his dividends every year, and they did dividends when you worked for Eastman way back then. He had to dig that all back into Eastman stock. They weren't allowed to take that money and put it in other stocks or in other investments. Most of it had to go into Eastman stock. And so my uncle retired in, I want to say, the early 90s, right about the time that, he took an early retirement. They were buying people out because with NAFTA, they were closing down all of the manufacturing up in East Tennessee, where he was at. And it wasn't just the Eastman plant. It was also AFG Industries, which was glass and Mead paper. And there's all kinds of like small manufacturing up there. And it's just decimated. So they bought him out, and he had like this portfolio full of Eastman stock that he had to hold on to. Well, guess what happens when the manufacturing base goes away and you're stuck, and you have all of this money and like Eastman stock, that stock goes down, you know? So all those years where they were, you know, tilling that money back into Eastman stock, you know, hoping that it would, you know, fertilize the soil and that, you know, more things would grow out of it. You know, these were the stories that they were being told. It didn't pan out. It did not pan out. And so these are people who should have retired fairly comfortably and are not retiring fairly comfortably, despite having, you know, spent an entire career as a PhD chemist and the head of a whole department up in Eastman. And so they're not alone, you know, and that's why I mentioned this. This is just one example of how, and by the way, don't shed a tear for my family. Like, that's not why I share that. This isn't about pity. This is, you know, you have to understand that the stock market interest is not our interest. The stock market does well when jobs are cut. The stock market does well when drugs are so expensive, nobody can afford them anymore. The stock market does well in a sociopathic way when the people in the United States, when Americans are doing the worst. So yeah, they would love to privatize Social Security, and they would love for everyone to, you know, be completely 100% bought in to Wall Street. You know, how sociopathic is that? You know, like to feel like your financial security and your future and your financial future are completely tied to companies behaving psychotically, to companies hurting people, to companies laying people off, to making sure that they can't have health care, to making sure that housing is so expensive that no one can live where they need to live in order to have a job, and so on and so forth. So yeah, the stock market is going to have a little freak out, and they can just go stand in a corner for a little while, because they've been very well cared for all of these years, and you know, I feel like they're gonna survive. I don't think there's much concern about those guys surviving in the long term. All right. It's a little bit after 7. Let's see. How far have we gone? We've done the stock market. Oh, we didn't talk about Casey Hunt. Casey Hunt this morning, we're still on the Bernie freakout. Casey Hunt this morning on Morning Joe, just by the by, also talked about how there's panicking behind the scenes within the party for how well Bernie Sanders is doing. Panicking behind the scenes. Now, we already knew that there's some kind of panicking behind the scenes because there's been, you know, rules changes all of a sudden. All of a sudden, you know, Bloomberg doesn't have to play by the same rules to get on the debate stage as anyone else. And the feeling is amongst party elites that, you know, they're not blind. They can see Joe Biden is sundowning. They can see that he can barely handle himself out in public, and definitely can't handle himself in public by himself, unchaperoned. So they've got Michael Bloomberg, who is a new entrant to the Democratic Party, Michael Bloomberg, who was Republican until 2015 and was the Republican mayor of New York, tried to get a third term, tried to buy out a third term in New York to be mayor for another term. Mike Bloomberg is the savior that party elites and the Democratic Party want and will push as you see Joe Biden continue his trajectory, his trends downward in the polls. 29 USC 157 at Organizing Power, great account on Twitter, did a fantastic thread yesterday on Michael Bloomberg, starting out with fact. Michael Bloomberg spent $12 million to reelect Senate Republican Toomey in 2016. Toomey beat the Dem McGinty by 1.5 points. If McGinty had won, Democrats would have controlled the Senate after Doug Jones won and could have blocked Kavanaugh from the Supreme Court. That's leading off a fairly long block of Bloomberg thread here. And that's gobsmacking. You know, we've got this nutball rapist on the Supreme Court now, pretty much because Michael Bloomberg spent $12 million to reelect a Republican and eked out a win over the Democrat. This is the guy the Democrats want to save them from Bernie Sanders. The ninth richest human on earth, Mike Bloomberg, like Donald Trump, refuses to release his tax returns. His net worth increased from $4 billion in 2001 when he became New York City mayor to $33 billion when he left in 2013. So in a mere 12 years, he not just doubled, he cubed. He cubed 4 times 4. He made a hell of a lot more money. I hate math. I just hate math. So $4 billion versus $33 billion. Somehow, being the mayor of New York City was worth $29 billion. And, you know, how did that happen? I just wonder. Bloomberg endorsed George W. Bush in 2004 at the Republican convention. Thank you, caller. Septupled, or chatter, septupled. That's the math I was looking for there. $4 billion to $33 billion, that is septupling, which is a sevening of monies. Wow, that's an easy, that now that I think about it, that was easy math. Thank you, chat person. Okay, so Bloomberg also endorsed George W. Bush. People endorse people all the time, but Michael Bloomberg, okay, octupling. It could be octupling, 3 to 4. Oh, okay, I gotcha. People endorse people all the time. but they don't necessarily endorse them at the Republican convention. So Michael Bloomberg endorsed George W. Bush at the 2004 Republican National Convention and thanked him for starting the war on terror. Honest to God, just a couple of administrations ago, there was Michael Bloomberg at the Republican. You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of Charlie Crist. This reminds me of Charlie Crist being a Republican governor and the Democratic Party thinking, oh, the Florida, thinking, oh, he's such a savior. Everybody, you know, we'll make him a Democrat and then everyone will vote for him. And everyone was like, no, I campaigned against him just a few years ago. I'm not having any part of that. I mean, like hardcore party loyalists were like, no, thanks. He was able to become a congressman out in Tampa Bay area. That's a whole other story. Other nasty Bloomberg stuff that I think you should know. He's paid hush money to various women that he's sexually harassed. Many of them want to speak out, but he refuses to release them from non-disclosure agreements. However, there is some really juicy journalism on this, which is also in this thread. There's a complaint from that was published in Business Insider, where women were talking about how Bloomberg treated them on the job. And one of the women's complaints alleged that an executive at the company said, quote, "I'm not having any pregnant bitches working for me." This came after several female employees sued Bloomberg LP, alleging sexual harassment and discrimination in the 1990s. One former Bloomberg employee, Marianne Olszewski, sued the company in 1998, alleging she was raped by a company executive. At the time, Bloomberg said he wouldn't believe her rape claims unless, quote, an unimpeachable third-party witness could back them up. Witness. Nice. 58 women have filed pregnancy discrimination lawsuits against Michael Bloomberg. This is a great person to put up against Donald Trump, ain't it? He even told one employee to have an abortion. Classy. Bloomberg has a long history of sexually harassing women and mocking their physical appearance and saying women are dumb. Prior to her pregnancy, so this is one of the women who was, is party to the pregnancy lawsuit. When she told Mike Bloomberg she was pregnant, he replied, quote, "Kill it." I swear to God, I'd duck somebody. I'd just freaking duck them. Kill it. You know, and I'm pro-choice, but I just, it's not your freaking choice. It's mine. This clip goes on to these allegations. Even prior to her pregnancy, Bloomberg had antagonized her by making disparaging comments about her appearance and sexual desirability. Quote, What is the guy dumb and blind? He is alleged to have said upon seeing her wearing an engagement ring. What the hell is he marrying you for? Quote unquote. Holy God. He also faced scrutiny over remarks attributed to him in a 32-page booklet gifted to him in jest by colleagues in 1990. The booklet, titled Portable Bloomberg, The Wit and Wisdom of Michael Bloomberg, featured a host of misogynistic, racist, and homophobic jokes. One quote attributed to Bloomberg read, quote, "If women wanted to be appreciated for their brains, they'd go to the library instead of Bloomingdale's." Oh, Jesus. And it just goes on and on. The stop and frisk, this is mentioned further down in the thread only because it is talked about so often. I mean, when you hear Michael Bloomberg, you have to think stop and frisk. Mike, stop and frisk Bloomberg. Like, that's who this person is. And you know, maybe I'm making too much assumptions. Maybe this is a New Yorker thing. But stop and frisk, if you need to know more about it, was one of the most racist policies in modern history. And it was basically NYPD, which is basically their own military unit, were empowered, and I believe still are, to just if they see a person of color, to just stop them, frisk them, and take them in, you know, just for no reason at all. You know, screw that Constitution thingy. Cut funding for HIV, spent $100 million to coerce New York City Council into changing the law to allow him to run for a third term. $100 million. Says China is not a dictatorship, and praised Biden's 1994 crime bill, which incarcerated an entire generation of black men. Because of course he did. Michael Bloomberg, this is the savior of the Democratic Party. That should tell you something about who the Democratic Party is. You know, a couple years ago, having a conversation with my husband, and we were talking about a particular political race in Jacksonville, I believe it was. And he says to me, you know, it seems like the Democrats are really Republicans. It seems like they're working together. It seems like they're like they're coordinating or colluding. And at the time, this was many years ago. And at the time I was like, oh, I don't, you know, that's a little far. That, yeah, no, he was 100% right. This is exactly what they do. This is exactly what Biden is doing. This is exactly who Biden is. This is who Bloomberg is. And this is who the Democratic Party has become, you know, because the money, you know, if you're going to make, if you're going to turn $4 billion into $33 billion by being the mayor of New York City, you're going to do that by getting all of the rich people in one place, be they Republicans or Democrats, and you know, just making deals and being like, I don't care, you know, we're just here to make money. We're not here for any other reason but to make money. And that is 100% what Bernie Sanders stands against. So if this race starts to turn into Bernie Sanders versus Michael Bloomberg, you know, which I could imagine at a certain point that maybe that shapes up, bring it on, because that's a fight I want to have. And that's a fight that Bernie Sanders, I believe, is ready to have. Okay, I'm gonna take just a short break. And tee up another couple of stories as we head on into, you know, we're just going to do this 6:30, 7:30. We're just going to do this till 8 o'clock, and everyone can go and start listening to the returns. I think that all of that is like super important. And, you know, I don't want to keep you for, you know, going into that. But coming up next, I want to talk a little bit about some polls and what is actually going on with caucuses. What are some of the new rules? What are some of the things we need to be looking for tonight? So hold on. So things to look for in tonight's Iowa caucuses. You're probably aware that the Des Moines Register and CNN spiked a poll this weekend. We don't know why they spiked the poll, but they spiked a poll. This is the famous Des Moines Register poll that everyone looks for before the caucuses happen. And it was very unexpected. It's a very odd move. Why the hell would that happen? Well, there's been a couple of stories written about it. And it seems like what happened is one, count them, one, zero, one, people called up the Des Moines Register and said, when I was taking the poll, they didn't read Pete Buttigieg's name back to me a second time. One person, unverified, you know, doesn't have any proof that that actually happened. They could have misheard. They could have been distracted for whatever reason, blah, 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 blah. But they call up the paper and they're like, well, when I was taking the poll, I didn't hear Pete Buttigieg's name read back to me a second time as they were reading back the candidates in a mixed up order so that, you know, people didn't just, you know, vote for the first one they heard. You know, this is, you know, something you do in polling to try to zero in and get better responses. You don't want people going to sleep, you know, as they're taking a poll and just hitting one or pressing one or saying the first one or whatever, that always being the answer they give. So people mix it up. So they'll introduce a list of candidates and they'll read it down in one order. And then they'll read it back a second time and give people a second chance to respond to it in a different order. And so the story goes that the polling company felt like one of the people who were, that the person who had given the poll to that caller had left off Pete Buttigieg's name. So this is one person in a poll that's, I'm sure, over a thousand or so people. This is Iowa. It's not a nationwide poll, so you don't need a humongous sample, but I would imagine about 1,100 people, maybe 800 to 1,100 people. And one person shows up and says, I didn't hear Pete Buttigieg's name. Now, somebody who's a Pete Buttigieg supporter has a motive to call and complain, you know, if they, you know, think that their candidate, you know, wasn't mentioned or whatever. What usually happens in polls, though, when you get feedback like that, is you wait and account for that kind of response. So, you know, you want to check and you want to make sure that there's nothing systemic. There was nothing reported that was systemic about that poll. It was just that one subjective anecdotal report, and you know, and they spiked it. So that doesn't make sense. And a lot of people started sharing supposed leaks from the Des Moines Register poll, and they all seemed to be right about the same. They were all, they all had numbers that stacked up like this. Bernie 30% at the top of the poll, Biden at 16%, just one above 15, one above the threshold, Warren at 14, Buttigieg at 12, and Klobuchar at 10, Yang at 6. So, and then here's another one. This is another one that claims to be leaked. And I tend to think that these numbers are right on because there's one number in here that is weird, and it's the Klobuchar number. Everything I saw had Klobuchar at 10%. And they all had Bernie at 30%, or I think one I even saw 31%. The person who is doing really, really bad in these polls is, well, kind of everybody is. Bernie's, according to these leaked polls, Bernie was at 30%. Biden was either at 16 or 18. Buttigieg was either at 12% or 15%, depending on which one you look at. And Warren was either at 14 or 13%, depending on which one of the leaked ones you looked at. So what's consistent is Bernie all the way on top, almost doubling the support that the next lower candidate has, which is Biden. And they also had Buttigieg sinking, where he had in the past been rising quite quite well in Iowa. So one of the things I think we ought to look for tonight is the performance of Pete Buttigieg in Iowa. He has put a lot of resources on the ground, and that could impact things. I've got a text here from a listener that says, we can confirm the final results of the unreleased Iowa poll is Sanders at 22, Warren at 18, Buttigieg at 16, and Biden at 13. Okay, that comports with what media has been saying. And I forget where I heard this. It might have been on Rising. I think that it was Crystal Ball who was speculating that the poll had been might have been spiked if Biden's numbers were significantly below 15%. And so this one has Biden at 13%. And that makes a lot more sense. That makes a lot more sense as to why you would spike it. We don't know what went on in the background with regard to, you know, how all of this went down. But I mean, suffice it to say, polls like this just do not get spiked. It's very, very uncommon. And imagine if it had been a Sanders supporter calling in and saying, hey, you know, I mean, Sanders has been left off of so many polls this cycle. It's ridiculous. But, you know, here's a Bernie Sanders supporter calling in saying, hey, you didn't mention my guy. Like, they would even take the call, you know, like as if. So that's interesting. You know, there are things going on in Iowa that I think are alarming. They're concerning. You know, let's keep an eye on them tonight as the results come in, and let's think about them as we go into tomorrow. You know, we got this hit piece in Politico yesterday. Rivals warn that Sanders' campaign plans to game the Iowa results. And this is a byline Natasha Korecki. This is such a ridiculous hit piece. They're saying that the Biden campaign is going to game the results because the Bernie Sanders campaign, because the Bernie Sanders campaign will be reporting out. They will be accounting for and reporting out the first round as well as the final round results. That's the popular vote versus the delegate vote, essentially. And for some reason, Politico thought that this made some kind of story. And I'll tell you why they thought it was some kind of story is because campaigns, media people from the Biden campaign and probably the Warren campaign thought that this was something that they could hit them on. They actually quote a Biden campaign official in here. Nobody is actually named. You know, it's all this anonymous, you know, gossipy, blah, blah, and this and that. They have this particular paragraph, I think, is interesting. Fueling the rising anxiety is a change to how the Iowa caucuses report their results in 2020. The party will, and this is the Democratic Party, so the Democratic Party counts all, you know, keeps all the tallies. It's not like here in Florida where we have like supervisors of elections or supposedly nonpartisan. This is totally run by the Democratic Party. The party will, for the first time, disclose the results from the first two rounds of voting and the allotment of what are known as state delegate equivalents. Major news organizations, including the Associated Press, have said they would declare the winner based on the final delegate count. Okay, so the first count is state delegate equivalents, and the second count are the final delegates. What they've essentially done, and Steve Kornacki did a breakdown of this earlier today. Let me see if I've got a clip of that. What they've done is change the way that the way that these tallies are done so that it's less dependent on a popular vote. So in 2016, there was about a 41%, the popular vote amounted to 41% of the totals. This time around, we are seeing that number go down to about 31%. And I've got his, at Kornacki's piece teed up right here. All right, have a listen to this.
Scale of this divide, 65 plus, it's Biden suddenly who's nearly at 40. It is Sanders who's suddenly in single digits. That's key, obviously, because which one of these groups is going to be represented more in the turnout. But it's also key because of something you were talking about earlier, and that is the new thing they're doing in Iowa this year. Usually in the past, here's your 2016 result. The winner of Iowa, it's been very simple. It's been the winner of the state delegate equivalent count. Hillary Clinton got 701 state delegate equivalents. Sanders got 697 in 16. This year, as you mentioned, they're also releasing the raw vote, the popular vote, who people are with when they first show up. Why is that so key or potentially key with those young, old numbers I just showed you? Take a look at some of the best counties for Bernie Sanders in Iowa in 2016. Winneshiek County up here, Johnson County down here, Jefferson County, Story County. These are college, oh, Blackhawk County. These are college counties. Those 18 to 39 or 18 to 29, really, they are heavily populated in these areas. If you add in Polk, where Des Moines is, these six counties accounted for 41% of the turnout in the 2016 caucuses. But based on the formula that's used by the Iowa Democratic Party to get the state delegate equivalents, they only account this year for 32% of the delegates. So it's a little bit of that electoral college popular vote dynamic we've talked about.
All right. So whereas in 2016, these heavily populated areas would have accounted for 41% of the state delegate count, now they are only going to account for 32% of the state delegate count. So they've changed the math. They've changed the equation to make it more difficult for a populist to run away with things. I'm going to mention one more thing, and I've got a caller. I'm going to bring a caller on. How exciting. What happens tonight is going to be determined about on outcome or how many people turn out. So turnout in 2008, there was a record of 240,000 caucus goers. And in 2016, the turnout was only 171,000 caucus votes, caucus goers. They go to the caucus. The regions matter, which votes are counted, whether they're in those populous counties with a lot of population or they're in the rural areas. And then there's all of the stuff about realignment, which I think we're all pretty fairly familiar with. I'm interested to hear, we got someone here in the 407. This is a local caller. Bring him on. Or her. Hey there. You're on PNN Extra with Brooke Hines. How you doing? Caller, are you there?
Are you talking to me? I'm not 407.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're 321.
Right. Yeah, nowhere near 407.
You are 321. You are on the Space Coast. 321 is that exchange or that area code is for the countdown for the shuttle. That's pretty cool.
Excellent.
So what did you... What's on your mind? What are you looking for tonight with the Iowa caucus?
Well, I mean, I'm a Bernie partisan like I know you are, and it seems like there's some reason to hope. I know none of us wants to jinx anything, but it looks like he may have some momentum going in, some teeny tiny little signs like the Drake caucus. Which was hilarious to watch on MSNBC, by the way, because there were The MSNBC correspondent is standing amongst a stream of screaming Bernie people, trying to explain that didn't mean much, and you know, spinning the camera around to the long empty hall and like the one or two Warren people floating around down at the other end. I mean, I hope that's a harbinger of things to come, but we'll have to see. I think you know, those spiked poll results really are a big deal. Like you said, that poll's been going on for however many decades, and it seems like a mighty thin excuse to not show them. I hate to sound conspiracy minded, but I can only imagine that some of the you know, more powerful establishment candidates like Biden would be happy to squash numbers that, you know, that question, you know, his viability, certainly. And, you know, maybe it came from Buttigieg. Maybe it really was an honest determination that something was wrong. But if those numbers that have been leaked are correct, it certainly gives people reason to think there could be political motivations for not showing those.
Well, you know, they align with the RCP, the Real Clear Politics poll average, you know, so like they've been polling and they take all the polls and they make an average, and they've got Sanders at 24.2%, Biden at 20.2%, Buttigieg at 16.4%, and Warren at 15.6%. So I'm going to go back and I'm going to look at the unconfirmed, unreleased poll had Sanders at 22%. Oh, that was the difference. Sanders at 22%, then Warren at 18%, then Buttigieg at 16%, then Biden at 13%. So,
right.
That is significantly different.
I mean, I think that's very interesting, and that's also in line with some people are spilling out some raw numbers, which, again, super early, nothing really has happened except in some satellite caucuses, but the supposed raw numbers that are floating out are kind of in line with that as well. It'll be very interesting to see how everything develops, and it is just getting started now. I think they were locking the doors at 7 o'clock Central Time, right? So we're just coming up on that in a little while here.
Yeah, we just have about 17 minutes until those doors close. Here's another Iowa poll. This is a CBS YouGov poll. It came out yesterday. Biden at 25, Sanders at 25, so they're tied at the top. Buttigieg at 21. Warren at 16, and Klobuchar down, she's got some clomentum at 5%. Not much clomentum. It's just a little clomentum. That sounds like a disease, like a gastric problem, clomentum.
She's clobbering everyone.
She's clobbering. She's getting clobbered. Go ahead.
No, I was probably going to say what you're going to say. I saw a teeny tiny satellite caucus result from some, I think it was from outlying rural counties, and she did win a couple of them, I think, or do very well in a couple of them. So there's definitely some little niches of clobsters out there, or whatever they're calling themselves these days.
Rock clubster. So here's the focus on rural poll. Buttigieg at 19, and this is probably not the same poll that you're referring to, but it's the David Binder Research / Focus on Rural poll. So it sounds like they're looking for farmers, rural voters, people way out in the country, few and far between areas. They have Buttigieg at 19%, Sanders at 17%, Biden at 15%, Warren at 15%, and Klobuchar is at 11%. And that's probably the highest I've seen her in any of these polls.
Huh, I wonder if that changed, because that sounds like the name of the one that I saw. I wonder if that's shifted since I looked at it. Very, very interesting. By the way, I don't know if you encourage this in your callers, but if we're indulging in any more, Sanders partisan, conspiratorial worries or whatever, as far as all of this goes, it's way early to be making any determinations. But given that at least there's an indication that Sanders might do well here, that seems to be enough to have thrown some of the mainstream publications into a little bit of a tailspin. There's an opinion piece in Washington Post entitled "Why Iowa Doesn't Matter." So they're already.
Oh my God!
If you're inclined to think that way, they're already out in the front of dismissing this whole thing should it go in a certain direction.
Well, let me just keep you on then for a few minutes, because that was the next thing I wanted to talk about, is predictions for tomorrow. So, like, let's say it stacks up like this. Let's say it's Sanders, then Buttigieg, then let's be generous and say it's Biden, then Warren. So I think so if we go Sanders, Buttigieg, Biden in third, and Warren in fourth, but a strong fourth. What do you think the media is going to be saying tomorrow about that?
I don't mean to be cynical, but I think that you can expect, a degree of partisan spinning like we've seen. It feels to me like to the extent there's an establishment push or any kind of favoritism coming out in the opinion columns and everything, that, they'd really like to see Biden. But maybe it's just a worry. I almost think that they might want to dismiss everything and say, let's wait till Super Tuesday with Bloomberg. Because that's what he said. He's just going to sit out and keep spending his piles of money until Super Tuesday and see where he lands then. And I almost imagine that he's their fallback. If you do believe that there is a, an establishment voice out there in some of the mainstream media publications. I mean, like I said, WAPO's already, prepared to poo-poo Iowa, which is normally hyped the way it is. If that were to go, anyway, but Biden, I think you're going to see that dismissed, ways to minimize it, and New Hampshire, Sanders is looking, if anything, maybe stronger there too. We'll have to see. But unless something very surprising happens, I think those sort of voices would be okay with Warren doing well. They're okay with Biden doing well. They're holding out, Bloomberg's like break the glass if the Democratic Socialists are coming. But I would really expect to see a lot of minimizing of the results. We've already seen this push for, you mentioned the article, suggesting that the Sanders campaign would, quote, game the numbers by releasing the first round numbers before the entire determination is made. You can already see, which in classic propaganda form is doing exactly what it's accusing others of doing. They're trying to preload for, a way to undercut the results should Bernie Sanders do too well. At least in my opinion, there are people out there pushing in that direction, and I would expect to see a lot of that if Sanders supporters' dreams come true and he makes a good showing here, whether it's a big win or just a win. I would expect to see a lot of poo-pooing and a lot of, this doesn't matter and it's a small state after all and blah, blah, blah. I mean, this is just the world we live in now. Everybody's got an angle. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see if anything but the establishment hopeful, if Biden doesn't do well and it doesn't look like he's going to, Warren's at least covered herself and said they're looking at the long haul and, they're going to see New Hampshire and this and that. They're sort of not, they haven't pumped up their hopes too big, but if Biden doesn't make a strong showing here, I think we're going to see a lot of noise. I think we're going to see a lot of heads exploding and a lot of shouting and a lot of rationalizing why it doesn't matter. whether it matters or not.
Are you aware of what you're talking about? Reminds me of the story I saw today on CNN, I think it was. Democrats' new online troll fighters make 2020 debut in Iowa. And this article is talking about using old Hillary Clinton campaign party hacks to determine on Facebook whether or not speech is within the bounds, and they have determined this group is determining that using the word rigging is verboten. And so if you use the word rigging in your reporting on anything in Facebook, they're going to come for you.
Yeah, I saw that. And I think you did some writing and broadcasting about, was it Correct the Record or no, Proper Not, when they were out there, really.
Proper Not.
The ones that were, Proper Not was this little op, the, you know, the origins of which were never traced, that was nonetheless reported as though it were an authoritative think tank or something. And was it the Times or the Post? And I think it was the Post, and they ran with this little
Thanksgiving Day front page over the fold.
And they ran with this, you know, who knows what group of what people who proposed. They went so far as they wanted search engines like Google to start blacklisting anyone that they had determined was a, you know, quote unquote amplifying Russian propaganda, which, you know, that's a whole other rabbit hole. But the way they had determined it, of course, is by, you know, inductive reasoning and going, well, you know, anyone who you know, opposed the Clinton campaign or liked any progressive campaign, anybody amplifying any of that was, by dint of the content, was therefore suspicious and ideally would be blocked entirely from search engines. And, you know, that got discredited very quickly. Those people wouldn't come out and say who they were. It's a tiny little troll account on Twitter now, I know, that just, like, yells at people periodically. And this really kind of smells like that. And I think it's sort of darkly hilarious that they picked the term rigging, which, of course, is a bit of a battle cry for, you know, the 2016 Sanders people who felt like the primary was, you know, run in various ways solely for Hillary Clinton's benefit in unfair ways. And they talked about rigging the election. There was a whole lawsuit against the DNC, which I think is still alive somewhere. And to pick that word, I mean, to me, and you can see where they're going, and look at the logic that's being proposed. Is, no, we're not going to look at the source. We're not going to look for actual, you know, proving outside influence or this or that. We're going to look at the content and decide that that's suspicious and try to use these corporate platforms to censor in a way that the government certainly could not under the First Amendment, which strikes me as extremely insidious. You know, I understand why a lot of people are in favor of –
Among the new weapons in the Democrats' online arsenal is a monitoring tool called Trendalyzer.
I saw that.
It's just Trendalyzer, really.
It also cleans your hair. Yeah. It's like a hot oil treatment and censorship tool all in one.
Trendalyzer, trademark. When stories from websites known to peddle misinformation mention candidates and begin getting shares on social media, Trendalyzer detects it, and an alert is sent to the relative campaigns and the DNC. And another tool built in-house at the DNC monitors Twitter traffic. Imagine that. On Monday, it'll watch for misinformation about how and where to go to caucus. Variations of the word.
Yeah.
Variations of the word rigged had been loaded into the system when CNN was shown it on Saturday. Attempts to undermine legitimate vote results using disinformation is something Democrats are watching out for. Important to note here, too, that one of the publications Proper Not had a problem with was Zero Hedge. And I always get Zero, and I apologize for this too. I get Zero Hedge and Naked Capitalism mixed up for some reason in my head. I think it has to do with the designs of the page. Zero Hedge is nothing like Naked Capitalism. Every article is written by Tyler Durden, you know, who from the
Fight
soap
Club.
Movie with the, thank you, Fight Club. Yeah. With the bar of soap. And a great movie, by the way. I love that movie. But Twitter suspended their account. It was a huge account with, it was like,
wow.
I don't know, like a couple hundred thousand followers. And just out of nowhere, for no reason, just smashed them. And I know that they had just done some kind of reporting on DNC screwery, something, you know, something along those lines. Oh, I'm really trying
sure.
to cut down on my cussing here on PNN.
We applaud you
just,
for that.
Just because you applaud. Thank you. yeah, but you know, this is chilling. So I'm thinking what I'm looking for is. Let's say, okay, this is the scenario. I totally expect this to be like headlines, this to be like the way the news runs tomorrow. Bernie Sanders will possibly do really well. He might even come in first. Like, let's say Bernie Sanders comes in first, Buttigieg comes in second, and Biden does super bad, you know, like being third would be bad for him. The headlines are all going to be, you know, rising star Buttigieg, who'd have thought he'd pull it out? You know, they'll ignore the Biden stuff and they'll ignore the Bernie stuff. That's what will happen. Because today they ran all of the Bernie freakout stories. And if I know the way media runs, you know, what editors are going to say is, okay, we've already done that. We're going to shift gears and we'll focus on, you know, the number two, and that'll lead our news for this cycle today. That's not a far-fetched scenario at all.
I'm sure you don't encourage irresponsible drinking, but one could easily devise a drinking game centered around how they manage, if that happened, how they managed to keep Sanders' name or saying Sanders won out of the headlines and come at it from another angle like that, you know, like Buttigieg, you know, pummels the field into second place, or, you know, Biden's muscular third place showing, you know, prepares him for the next battle. I mean, I'm sure you could create one of those bingo cards or something like that, where, you know, anything to avoid saying, you know, just as frankly, the polls and graphs on a lot of the cable news shows have avoided mentioning when Sanders was doing well in the past. I'm giving away what a partisan I am, but I think it's true. I would be very surprised if it unfolded that way and we didn't see those sort of passive sideways headlines that avoided talking about anything terribly positive about the, you know, the dreaded progressive candidate.
I think you're right. And I'm going to abstain from that drinking game because I have a feeling I would get, you know, that's day drinking and I don't need to do that. But thank you for calling 321 Space Coast person. That's I really appreciate you calling in. We're going to do a show tomorrow after we get all of the results, and I'm going to invite as many people to call in as possible. And of course, people can call in and use the number whenever, and I will pick up if I've got a break in the content that I'm working on. So, but thank you, caller. And hang tight tonight. We'll see how things go. And for the rest of you guys, just hang in there. Just hang in there. We'll see what happens. I think Sanders is going to do well. And we're going to make it through this. The media is going to continue to suck. And we're going to still be here. We'll be fine. So take care. And we'll see you tomorrow. We'll do this all again. With callers, call in.